thanks for listening to this episode of the MHP podcast. I have, for the first time, Sonia Humphrey here from the Weight Management Center. I've had David here in the past talking about wound care and wound management, but what a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit how you got into this work and why you do what you do.
Well, I have internal medicine training, and in 2003, actually when I was still kind of on maternity leave, Dr. Bradshaw approached me because he was wanting to start a bariatric program at Mission Hospital. Mm-hmm. And as a surgeon, he wanted to have both a surgical program, but he also wanted to have a non-surgical program so it would be comprehensive. So in 2003, I started attending meetings that were being held at Mission, primarily with the Health Education Center mm-hmm. folks. And we were collaborating and decided to work together with resources to start a medical program,
right,
which launched in May of 2004 as a very fledgling program.
Right. But it's grown tremendously.
Yes, yes. I was thinking back on, at the beginning, it was myself, a nurse, and a dietitian, and we were seeing patients, and we had a coordinator, and we had a social worker who helped with the classes, but that was it.
Yeah.
And now we have, we just had Christmas presents for 28 people.
Wow, that's
awesome.
So we have
28 people at our center now.
Which kind of speaks to the scope of the problem. It's certainly not getting better in terms of obesity and the challenges you guys are facing and having to help manage, right? It's a growing problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You were saying a little bit as we were getting started that right now a lot of the folks that you're seeing are self-referred. They come in on their own, and the hope that we want to bring some awareness to the physicians out there about what you guys do, what you can offer, and how we manage obesity, if you want to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so we see patients anywhere if they have overweight with a comorbidity or if they have obesity.
Okay.
And typically our patients have tried multiple diets, an average about nine throughout their life that haven't been sustained or long-term successful.
Right.
So when I'm interviewing patients, a lot of times they'll say, well, I researched and I found you, or I know someone who came here and they did really well, mm-hmm. or I had this and I decided to start to figure out, you know, if I was about to get on insulin or I was
right.
about to get a knee replacement and I decided I really want to try a more aggressive weight loss first. So, I mean, that's great. They come in, they find us, and we do things. And I would say there is probably a small percentage that does get referred. And typically that will be from maybe if they have a significant medical problem, like if they need a knee replacement or they need something and the doctor wants us to help them with weight loss. Or just in general, if they've had a conversation and they've been trying to treat their obesity and it's maybe not, you know, responding to the treatment, then
right.
then they'll refer them over to us.
And you know, I guess one of the good parts about self-referrals is that there's probably some level of motivation, I guess, on the behalf of the patients, right? Is that, mm-hmm. Although it's still not easy, at least it helps that they took that first step. I imagine accountability is one of the first things mm-hmm. to do.
Yeah, they definitely need to be motivated. And that, by the time they see us, obviously they are because they've had
right.
to go through a lot of steps to get there.
Right.
And they've made a commitment to be in our program, which is now I'm speaking about the medical program. We call it the medical intensive program because it really is 18 weeks of weekly visits, a lot of medical visits that you have to have during that 18-week program, which then extends out long-term into what we call the MEDL program, which stands for Maintaining Exercise, Diet, and Lifestyle.
Okay.
So they know coming in that this is a long-term commitment, or it's supposed to be a long-term commitment.
Yeah.
And they a lot of times express that they're glad that it's a long-term commitment because
right.
they know that in the past when it's been short-term, it hasn't stuck.
It hasn't worked. You mentioned that folks have to go through a lot even just to get in. Tell us a little bit about that process, that intro process.
Okay, so patients enter either through, they have to come through an information session.
Mm-hmm.
And we offer free information sessions that are both for the surgical program and the medical program, or the non-surgical program.
Mm-hmm.
So the non-surgical program has two components, the medical intensive program and the medical flex program. So those programs are introduced in the free information sessions.
Okay.
So if patients decide that they like what they hear and they're further interested, then they have to go through an orientation session. Okay. And an orientation session is the next step to fill out all the paperwork, mm-hmm. figure out all the logistics, be able to really understand a little bit more in depth of what the programs are asking of them. Mm-hmm. After they finish an orientation, then they are booked for an initial history and physical with either a physician or a mid-level provider. And we have two physicians and two mid-level providers at Weight Management.
Okay.
That accommodate these visits mm-hmm. To get patients started.
Right. And then, so on average, from the time they have that information session to the time they have their first, maybe I should call it an intervention, mm-hmm. Is it usually on the order of weeks or months?
Yeah, I would say it's probably 4 to 6 weeks, yeah. something like that.
So they've already had to commit some mm-hmm. time and energy to kind of get to the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because the medical program is so intensive and we do have after hours on Tuesday nights, there's only so many people we can take in each week.
Right.
And so sometimes patients have to wait, especially if it's, you know, at the beginning of the year or things like that, where there's a lot of patients wanting to get in. But we try to do our best to get them in as quickly as we can.
Of course. In the decision, it sounds like the informations are separated, the surgical versus the non-surgical track. Do you have folks that often attend both and try to make a decision as to what's best for them?
Sometimes. I mean, we definitely encourage that if they are undecided, because they answer so many questions about the different programs.
Right.
And sometimes if patients are, say they thought that they wanted to have surgery, but once they get the evaluation and maybe they're not a surgical candidate, then they'll be referred over to the medical information mm-hmm. session to right. see if they want to do that instead. So it doesn't always happen up front,
right.
but it can happen at any point.
Where do you see is maybe if you had an ideal profile, although I'm sure you get different types of people, different comorbidities, but a thought of someone that might be better suited for a non-surgical versus surgical.
Mm-hmm. So an ideal surgical candidate would be someone who's going to have an enormous benefit from having bariatric surgery. So that patient has already demonstrated multiple attempts at weight loss mm-hmm. that were either not or partially successful, but didn't achieve enough medical outcomes to result in that benefit. And so they will have a higher BMI with comorbidities. And the main comorbidities that we look at for our surgical patient would be diabetes, sleep apnea, hyperlipidemia, fatty liver, mm-hmm. osteoarthritis, the ones that are going to have a really big impact for resolution or improvement with significant weight loss.
Right.
And those patients have to be, have enough experience with nutrition and things like that to understand what we're asking them to learn and then practice
right.
and then be ready for after surgery.
Sure.
And then a patient who would be maybe an ideal candidate for the medical program would be someone who maybe hasn't tried a really comprehensive lifestyle approach to weight management, who is coming in, maybe the comorbidities aren't as severe, and you're catching them maybe earlier, and you can get that intervention and that resolution or improvement with maybe out as significant of a weight loss, maybe a lower BMI.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also get a lot of medical patients who have had surgeries before and they just don't want to have another surgery, or they
right.
can't have another
or they can't.
Surgery.
Right, sure.
If they have, you know, adhesions or risks
right.
in there, like I thought I could have a patient have bariatric surgery who had pancreatitis before and he couldn't. The surgeons
yeah.
said that's a
they
contraindication,
no.
especially if they
okay.
have a pseudocyst or, you know, they had some kind of drainage or something
right.
put in there. So you can't, you know, it's not always straightforward who's going to be able to have that surgery.
Right.
So there's a lot of patients that I'll see, and that's fine. You know, we just do it the other way.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily BMI related or comorbidity related, although you can try to, you know, look at all of that together and see where they fall.
Right.
And based on what we recommend versus what the patient also prefers.
Right. Yeah. And it's good because I think a lot of folks listening, certainly myself included, would have thought that there were some maybe strict BMI rules, but there aren't. There's a lot more nuanced than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for bariatric surgery, you do have to have a BMI of at least 35 with a comorbidity or 40.
Sure.
So, you know, we get into that sometimes too. It's right on the line, and we're not really sure what to do. And so we try to base the other things on it as far as what's their diet history, how old are they, what do we think is going to be the best benefit.
Yeah, what's the likelihood of success in the long term, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the non-surgical side, you mentioned a couple of different tracks, and I know you guys try to individualize it to where the patient's at. Maybe it'd be good now to talk about the two main tracks and maybe even some nuances you might see even in between those.
So the medical intensive track is the one that is really, really comprehensive and has a high accountability, a higher level of intervention and face-to-face visits. It lasts longer. It's a higher commitment level.
Okay.
And patients will self-identify that program that they choose because they say, I want medical supervision.
Mm-hmm.
I want more accountability. I want to have all these classes. I want to be interactive and have skills building and learn. And that's called the medical intensive program. The medical flex program was a program developed to address the needs of patients who didn't fall into the typical other program, the typical two programs.
Right.
So it is a basically opening the door into the services that we offer. So you get to have a visit with the PA or the nurse practitioner or even me sometimes, and then you have now access to all the dietitian resources, to the behavioral health specialist, to the exercise specialist, to the center where we have a mini gym. You get webinar classes. So they run once a month for 6 months.
Wow.
And those are, so you can get that class wherever you are. You don't have to have face-to-face visits. It's a lower degree of accountability, but it's a higher degree of flexibility to work with your schedule. And if you can't, if you just can't come face-to-face for 18 weeks in a row. And so so that's a new program, and we're just really working out the kinks, but that just may be someone who says, hey, I just want a few dietitian visits, and I want the basics, and I want to, you know, maybe see what I need after talking with you guys as, you know, as experts to tell me, like, what do you identify? And then I can kind of hone it in versus getting the full deal medical intensive program.
And the medical intensive program, often people immediately go to meal replacements. Is it always that as part of it, or?
That is a foundational given for the medical program because the philosophy of meal replacements is, I look at it as a way to intervene that is very straightforward.
Right.
And it improves, it generally improves nutrition compared to what was happening before.
Sure.
It allows portion control.
Yeah.
It allows very clear-cut, strict calorie following. I know how many calories they're eating. It allows for us to set meal routine to overcome skipping and meal delay, meal skipping and meal delay.
Yeah.
It allows us to have a nutrition focus, and it allows us to accomplish nutrient consistency, which is really important as patients are losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
And really we're trying to get at the root of insulin resistance and other metabolic problems. So they are coming in as a tool to neutralize any variables that can come in on a traditional diet.
Right.
So those are, you know, like I said, the kind of the foundation, because that's the premise that we want to have a strong, nutrition intervention that is evidence-based, but it's also stimuli narrowed so that patients they can work on other things that we're focusing on in the classes.
Right.
We're focusing on environmental design. We're focusing on communication, stress reduction, time management, planning, preparing. Things, you know, that you're designing while you're on the meal replacement, so you're not having to just focus on food during that first 12 weeks. So then after the first 12 weeks are done, patients are now weaned off of meal replacements. They are transitioned back to food, but by then they have a new foundation for nutrition.
Absolutely. You mentioned a multidisciplinary approach, which I always love, because problems as complex as obesity are not one-sided. Right? Tell me a little bit about what the composition of your team and kind of what their role is.
So we have groups of teams. We have a dietitian team. We have a behavioral health team. And then we have an exercise team, but she's just, she's all by herself. But
yeah, team of one.
Yeah, a team of one. So our dietitian team we have, and they are trained, you know, in weight management. Mm-hmm. And they work with both surgical and medical patients, everybody. They teach classes and everything. The behavioral health team is our newest team. And we have a psychologist, a licensed professional counselor, and a social worker, an LCSW.
Awesome.
So all surgical patients are required to have a comprehensive psychological evaluation.
Right.
And the patients will say, well, is that to see if I'm crazy? And we say it's really to let you know that you have the resources. We're identifying any eating disorders.
Right.
We're identifying any undertreated or untreated mental health problems that mm-hmm. can become more complicated or complex after having bariatric surgery.
Right.
We're making patients aware of increased risks post-op, which we know suicide and transference addiction, alcoholism is more common in post-op surgical patients compared to the regular population. So we have to make everybody aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the psychological evaluation is a huge component of the surgical program. It is a contingent mandatory recommendation for the medical program, meaning not everyone has to have it, but we do have a screening in.
Mm-hmm.
If there's some things identified up front, we have an opt-in.
Okay.
For patients, and then we have just a recommendation, and then we have some patients that we really don't feel need it at this point, you know, especially when we're first getting into things.
Yeah.
So a patient can be seen by anyone over there, and they see one-on-one, and they also teach classes. We have a lot of classes for both programs that are specifically designed around the main behavioral
right.
issues that we see. And
yeah.
So patients can, you know, access those. And then exercise, we have exercise classes, exercise one-on-ones. We have a mini gym there. Patients can use the space.
It's awesome.
Supervisor, you know, when she's just around there.
Yeah.
And she does also some personal trainer visits.
Wow, that's awesome. It was very comprehensive. That's wonderful.
And then I have to give it out to the operational
yeah.
team too, because they're a team too. They're not
yeah.
clinical, obviously, but they
right.
we have a huge team of operations who run insurance benefits, who help with appointments. They're patient navigators.
Yeah.
They help really guide patients on in answering questions for all the phone calls that come in.
Yeah.
They work with referrals. They work on getting messages back to the referring physicians about what the status is of the patient and where they are in the program, or if they even made it past free information session and things like that. And then we have the front that, you know, really helps patients when they first come in to just get to know everything. And it's all of that.
It's kind of the glue that keeps it together. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially with having such a comprehensive program, I imagine from the patient perspective, those are the kinds of folks that help it seem like one program. It's a seamless system, right?
Yes.
Which is hard to do sometimes. You mentioned that you recently got some results on your programs, and I didn't know it seems like it would be great to share some of what you found and some of the work that you've done.
Yeah, so as most of us know, we've been in the EMR world here for a while, and we've had a couple EMR switches and things like that.
Sure.
So it's been really, really, really hard for us to collect any outcomes data. But in April of 2015, I'd seen a study that came out in December of 2014 showing that if patients make it to 2 years of maintaining weight loss, they're a predictor to make it 10 years to maintain weight loss with lifestyle change. So we implemented a plan to get everybody to 2 years. And
awesome.
It's been extremely, we haven't succeeded, but we're on it, and we're doing everything we can, because we really know that with retention, and our outcomes are showing that with visit frequency, with staying in, the patients can really achieve medically significant weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 18-week data, which is at the end of the 18-week program is the 18 weeks face to face is the first phase of the medical intensive
right.
program, which carries out then to 1 year and 2 year.
Uh-huh.
So at 18 weeks, we have an average of 13.8% total body weight loss, with a range up to 28.6%.
Wow.
At year one, we have 14.9% total body weight loss maintenance up to 34.9%. And then at year two, we have an 11.9% total body weight loss average.
That's amazing.
Up to 40.1%.
Wow.
So we are achieving, our goal is 5 to 10%, right, and we're above that.
Yeah.
For all of those touch points.
Yeah.
And 95 to 100% of the patients do lose weight. In the first year, we're finding a little drop off in the curve, when, especially when patients are having less visits. Mm-hmm. So the drop off in visits, we know, is a risk. We're seeing that as a risk that something's going wrong.
Right.
And why aren't they coming, and what's happening?
Yeah.
And so we're really working on using this data now to come back and tell patients that the more visits you have, the basically the more weight loss you're going to lose, and we can prove it now.
Do you feel like when, you know, normally in the cycle, and the patients I've had over the years that embark on a journey of trying to lose weight, and they have a setback, whether it's a holiday or a trip or just stress, whatever the case may be, they often feel some combination of embarrassed and disappointed, et cetera. And I'm wondering, because they don't show up, maybe possibly for some of those reasons, they maybe feel they don't want to disappoint you or their providers they've established a relationship with. Do you find that sometimes is the case?
Yes, it definitely is the case. And we really try at the first touch point at Free Information to really present obesity as a chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
We present it that way. And when patients say, well, I was ashamed, I say, well, are you ashamed if you get a fever?
Right.
Are you ashamed if your blood pressure's high?
Yeah.
Are you ashamed if you're having chest pain? No. Well, this is the same thing. This is the exact same thing. And we need to get that out of your head, because this is a chronic disease that has relapses. And it's just every disease in medicine. You know, there's only two diseases that can be cured, which is some infections and some cancer. That's it. Nothing else is cured.
Right.
And so we really promote that and teach that this is just like any other chronic disease that will flare, that will have relapses. And that's, we want to obviously try to prevent those, but we also can manage them very well when they happen.
Right. You were mentioning as we were getting on that same tone, that same language of viewing obesity in this way is something you would hope more PCPs would have as well. And a good message for those docs on the network that are listening, thinking about, right, how we see obesity on the list, and it's often we will treat the diabetes and the hypertension, but not address that in the way we should.
Yeah. If you see obesity as the common denominator between all your comorbidities that you're managing, then going to that root, that problem, will really help you with all your other comorbidity disease management.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to help that. And if you can, as you're seeing your patients and there are all these comorbidities are starting to add up, and you're looking at the BMI and you're looking at waist circumference and you're looking at all these other things that are showing you that obesity is the real issue,
right,
then if you can consider that as a specialty, you know, area, and a referral is in order, that will help us help you to get, you know, your patient managed, you know, appropriately and enhanced as a specialty. We can offer that to you.
Absolutely. Couple last things before we go. One is insurance coverage or cost, if you can speak to that.
Well, that's what we have, you know, our team for, because there are so many nuances to insurances that it really has to be gone through individually with patients.
Gotcha.
Meaning some patients have a limited number of, they can only see a physician four times a year for obesity. And then some patients have 12 dietitian visits for free that they can use all year.
Yeah.
We have, nobody covers exercise.
Right.
We're trying to get coverage for classes, but that's been very difficult. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. We do have another program called the Eating Awareness Program that we are trying to get insurance coverage for, and that deals with mild binge eating or emotional eating. It's not for severe binge eating, but it can be for mild to mild moderate binge eating.
Yep.
So we have that we get insurance coverage for. So we're seeing it more, and for bariatric surgery, you know, it's pretty clear cut what your policy says, if you can have it or not, and then what the requirements are.
Right.
So really, we just tell patients to get in and get an information session, and we'll help you figure it out. They'll help you figure that out.
So the information session is still the first thing to do, and it's best for people not to assume it won't be covered or see that as a barrier, it sounds like. I mean, really go to the information session and check it out.
Admission has financial assistance
in
place to help people. For sure. So there's always that option too. We never want finances to be a deal breaker.
Yeah. To get to the right outcome.
Yeah.
So I will post the phone numbers on the podcast information piece so that folks can have it when they look at the podcast, either on iTunes or on SoundCloud. They'll be able to see the information and they can call and get the dates for the information session. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for joining us, Sonia.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you again for listening to the MHP podcast. If you have other ideas or thoughts about future episodes, please email me at robert.fields@msj.org. Thanks.